They were rare, but distributed across a large area of the peninsula. It was that very rarity which had made them the focus of early attention, for the trees were conspicuously different to the other forest species. Each rose to the height of the canopy and no higher, 40 or 50 meters above the forest floor, depending on the surrounding growth. Each was shaped like a spiral candlestick, thickening towards the base. Near the top, the trees flared into a wide, flattened structure like a dark green mushroom, tens of meters across. It was these mushrooms which had made the Hamadryad tree so obvious to the first explorers, overflying the jungle in one of the Santiago's shuttles. Now and then they found a clearing near a tree and set down to investigate on foot. The biologists amongst them had struggled to find an explanation for the tree's shapes, or the strange differentiation in cell types which occurred around the tree's perimeter and along radial lines through it. What was clear was that the wood at the heart of the tree was dead growth, with the living matter existing in a relatively thin layer around the husk. The spiral candlestick analogy was accurate up to a point, but a better description, I felt, was of an enormously tall and thin helter-skelter, like the dilapidated old one I remembered from an abandoned fairground in Nueva Iquique, its pastel blue paint peeling away a little more with each summer. The tree's underlying shape was more or less a tapering cylindrical trunk, but wrapped around this, ascending to the summit, was a helical structure whose spirals did not quite lie in contact with each other. The helix was smooth, patterned in geometric brown and green shapes which shimmered like beaten metal. In the gaps where the underlying trunk was visible, there was often evidence for a similar structure which had been worn down or absorbed into the tree, and perhaps level of structure behind that too, though only a skilled botanist really had the eye to read those subtleties of tree growth. Detailing had identified the major spiral around this tree. At the base, just where it looked as if the spiral ought to plunge into the ground like a root, it terminated in a hollow opening. He pointed it out to me. "It's hollow almost all the way to the top, bro." "Meaning what?" Rodriguez said. He knew how to handle the juvenile, but he was no expert on the creature's biological cycle. "Meaning it's already hatched," Kawea said. "The juveniles from this one have already left home." "They eat their way out of their mother," I said. We still had no idea whether there were distinct Hamadryad sexes, so it was entirely possible that they had eaten their way out of their father as well. Or neither. When the war was over, probing Hamadryad biology would fuel 1,000 academic careers. "How big would they have been?" Geeta asked. "As big as our own juvie," I said, kicking the maw at the base of the spiral. "Maybe a touch smaller, but nothing you'd want to meet without some heavy firepower."
"I thought they moved too slowly to pose us any threat."
"That's the near adults," Dieterling said, "and even then, you wouldn't necessarily be able to outrun it, not through overgrowth like this."
"Would it want to eat us? I mean, would it even recognize us as something to be eaten?"
"Probably not," Dieterling said, "which might not be much consolation as it slithers over you."
"Ease off it," Kawea said, putting a hand round Geeta. "They're like any wild animal. Only dangerous if you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And we do know, don't we?"
Something crashed through the overgrowth behind us. Startled, we all turned around, half expecting to see the eyeless head of a near adult bearing down on us like a slow-moving freight train, crunching through the jungle which impeded its implacable slithering progress about as efficiently as fog. Instead, what we saw was Dr. Vi-